And now, it's time for our weekly news round, Lutheran Radio News with Paul Hill.
The 66th Annual Synod of the Evangelical Lutheran Church of England, with the theme, The Lord Will Guide Us Forever, took place last weekend for the first ever time via Zoom. We were delighted to see and hear from the Reverend Dr. Gleason Schmidt, the newly elected President of the Evangelical Lutheran Church Synod of France, Bishop Thor Henrik with the Evangelical Lutheran Diocese in Norway, Reverend Leif Jensen, President of the Evangelical Lutheran Free Church in Denmark, the Reverend Dr. Timothy Quill, General Secretary of the International Lutheran Council, and the Reverend James Krikova, Eurasia Director, Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Greetings from the Lutheran Church of Australia, the Lutheran Church Canada, the Evangelical Lutheran Church in Portugal were also received. Despite there being a mass of work to be done over the 2 days of Synod, there were humorous reminders of the TV programme Celebrity Squares, where those involved appeared to be in little boxes above, below or adjacent to their fellow celebrities. As the Synod started, it quickly became clear of the amount of effort and work that the Executive Council and the various committees had put in. For those not in the UK, the Charity Commission has deemed that the ELCE cannot continue in its present form and that each church must register as an independent charity. Easier said than done, as our current way of working has to be dismantled and rebuilt in an entirely different way. Even the title of the Evangelical Lutheran Church of England will morph into something else, as yet undecided. Documents, many of them, have been drafted, redrafted and drafted again. Challenges have been made, arguments wrangled and talked through. The various committees made their reports, the business of the church was discussed at length and nominations for various offices were put forward. In the congregational reports, the words COVID and lockdown were prominent, and they hid behind them many restrictions, losses, loneliness, illness and fear. Yet there was also optimism, the creativity and innovation that has not only enabled congregations to both meet in difficult circumstances, but also positive new developments that only came to be because of the unique circumstances of this year. Some congregations have begun to meet regularly for common times of prayer. Many congregations have found ways to provide services, studies and other gatherings online amongst themselves and to the wider world. Through some of these means, despite restrictions, the gospel has even reached new people and new partnerships have been forged. All through the reports, two central themes shine through: God's ongoing faithfulness and the faithfulness and tenacity of his people in the ELCE and our congregations, especially in difficult times. May God grant us times of refreshment and renewal, and at a time when we can not only see and hear one another, but to come together as one body, not meeting one another, but really meeting together. The second day looked at the proposed membership agreement and the potential issues contained therein. With helpful suggestions and tweaks, a lot of progress was made. New officers on the various committees were elected to applause, and special mention of thanks goes to the chairman, George Samietz, and the ELCE treasurer, Dr. Cindy Lumley, for the sheer amount of work involved, and yet more to come. A mutant strain of coronavirus has been used by Matt Hancock to justify plunging 11 million people into the harshest tier of restrictions. From midnight on Tuesday this week, London and parts of Essex and Hertfordshire entered Tier 3, meaning pubs, restaurants and theatres will have had to close amid warnings of catastrophic economic consequences. The move means 34 million people in England will be in Tier 3, more than 61% of the population, with a further review of the tiers to be announced this week. The Health Secretary said the new strain was more contagious and causing an exponential rise in infections in the southeast, leaving ministers with no option but to take swift, decisive action 3 days before the completion of the review of the current tiers. More than 1,000 cases of the new variant have been identified in nearly 60 different local authority areas, Mr. Hancock said, and the numbers are increasing rapidly. An increasing number of local authorities in London announced immediate school closures, supported by the Church of England, forcing ministers to threaten legal action in a bid to keep them open. Scientists at the government's Portland Down Laboratory are now urgently cultivating the new strain to test whether it's resistant to vaccines, although Mr. Hancock said there was no evidence to suggest that might be the case. Hospitality bosses warned that the move will cost 150,000 jobs in the capital, as pubs and restaurants lose a collective £2.6 billion in revenue over the next 2 weeks. Theatres will also be forced to close just days after they reopened in a devastating blow to the West End. And thousands of fans who've been expecting to attend Premier League football matches in London this week will be turned away. Christmas shoppers have been told to avoid travelling into London from lower tier areas, and even those living in the capital should minimise travel unless it is necessary. Rishi Sunak, the Chancellor, faced urgent demands for increased economic support for businesses most affected by the Tier 3 move. There was opposition to the move from some Tory MPs, who cited it as proof that the government's current strategy isn't working. At a Downing Street press conference on Monday night, Mr. Hancock insisted that a Christmas relaxation of the COVID-19 rules will still go ahead from December the 23rd to the 27th, but said, "We know from experience that the best thing to do is to act fast, and we do not rule out further action." Both he and Chris Whitty, the chief medical officer, urged people to use restraint in deciding whether to visit relatives over Christmas. And Mr. Hancock said anyone intending to visit elderly friends or family should be extremely careful about who you see in the meantime. Professor Whitty said the new strain of the virus had been discovered after scientists went to look and see if there was anything going on after a spike in cases in Kent. Mr. Hancock said initial analyses suggest that this variant is growing faster than the existing variant, though there was currently nothing to suggest the new variant was more likely to cause serious illness, and it was highly unlikely that it would have failed to respond to a vaccine. However, he said, it shows we've got to be vigilant, to follow the rules, and everybody needs to take personal responsibility not to spread this virus. The World Health Organization has been informed of the new variant, though scientists said mutations were a normal part of the evolution of a virus. From Tuesday, 14,000 pubs and restaurants in London alone are restricted to takeaway service only, meaning many will have to close and some may never reopen. Kate Nichols, chief executive of UK Hospitality, said, "This is going to be absolutely catastrophic for the hospitality industry in the southeast." Many of these businesses will have spent huge amounts of money making sure they could reopen after lockdown, only to be told they have to close again. Over the Christmas and New Year period, they will lose £2.6 billion in revenue, and without immediate support from the Chancellor, such as an extension of business rates relief and VAT relief, they will be staring down the barrel of bankruptcy. We are talking about 150,000 jobs being lost in a sector that is going to be vital to help power the economy in a no-deal Brexit. Theatre producer Sir Cameron McIntosh said the decision to put London into Tier 3 after 3 days after West End theatres had started to reopen was devastating for both the theatre and the economy and smacks of panic. He said the considerable and costly efforts to reopen theatres in a COVID-secure way now seem worthless and had destroyed trust between the industry and ministers. Composer and theatre owner Lord Lloyd Webber said it seemed arbitrary and unfair that people can jostle uncontrolled in crowded shops, yet orderly, socially distanced theatre going is banned. Michael Harrison, director of Pantoland at the London Palladium, which hosted the Duke and Duchess of Cambridge and their children last week, together with Culture Secretary Oliver Dowden, said the government's yo-yo approach to the crisis was bordering on incompetent. Former Tory leader Sir Ian Duncan-Smith suggested the rise in infections was happening among school children and their parents, meaning there was a case for allowing pubs and restaurants to stay open, but Mr. Hancock said cases in the over 60s were rising rapidly. Former Chief Whip Mark Harper, leader of the COVID recovery group of lockdown skeptics, said, "I'm afraid that London and other parts of the South East moving into Tier 3 shows that the current strategy to combat COVID isn't working." Israeli authorities are set to unveil structures within King Herod's hilltop palace Herodium in the Judean desert that were previously off limits. Israel's Nature and Parks Authority plans to open the revamped site on Sunday, allowing visitors to see for the first time Herodium's arched stairway, foyer, and private theatre. Herodium is a cone-shaped mound in the desert about 6 miles from Jerusalem, covering the remains of King Herod's impressive palace. The Roman-appointed leader, who reigned Judea between 37 BC and 4 BC, was known both for his brutality and the colossal building projects throughout his life. Herod died in Jericho in spring 4 BC from a long painful illness and was himself buried at the site. Archaeologists believe the palace was built by slaves and contractors and consisted of 4 towers, believed to have been where Herod lived, as well as frescoes, an aqueduct, elaborate mosaic floors, and corridors connected by archways. Nearby springs were channeled to supply water to Herodium's aqueduct system, water the gardens, and supply water to an enormous pool which took pride of place on the hilltop. Opening to the public is Herod's royal hospitality room in Herodion, which in his lifetime was only accessible to the king's important guests, Israel's Nature and Parks Authority said. Guests will be invited to watch a spectacular, innovative display in this royal room, walk up the stairway, and in the arch's hallway. This is an unparalleled archaeological laboratory, said Roy Porat, the Hebrew University archaeologist in charge of the excavations, comparing it to Pompeii's preservation in lava. Between 23 and 15 BC, King Herod the Great constructed the fortress palace and a small town on the cone-shaped mound. The hilltop palace, which has its main entrance facing Jerusalem, was Herod's favorite and the only one he named after himself. Later in his life, Herod suffered from chronic kidney disease and a rare infection that led to intense itching, painful intestinal problems, breathlessness, convulsions in every limb, and gangrene of the genitalia. In preparing for his death, a mere burial plot would not have been satisfactory, as he wanted his final place of rest to overshadow his palace. Archaeologists say Herod ordered to have his palace buried after his death, using ground from below the hill it was perched upon until the outline of the structure was no longer visible. Burying the palace provided Herod with the satisfaction of knowing his grave would stand out, but it has also helped preserve and protect the site for 2,000 years. Today, Herodium, a hugely popular tourism destination, is in the occupied West Bank, but falls in an area where Israel exercises full military and civilian control. Archaeologists uncovered Herod's grave in its fortress-turned burial site in 2007 by a team from the Hebrew University of Jerusalem. Ehud Netzer, who led the team, said that despite an absence of bones, they concluded that the 8-foot-long tomb they unearthed must have been Herod's because of its lavish design. One of the limestone remnants has a flower-like pattern. It was not a sarcophagus that was common or which anyone could afford during the era, he said at that time. Herod hosted Marcus Agrippa, the second in command to Caesar Augustus, in that room in 15 BC, according to Porat. This was an extremely important visit for Herod, Porat said. Herod redecorated the visiting room to include a series of drawings mimicking open windows and depicting Agrippa's conquest of Egypt, with bold and lavish stucco reliefs above. Prior to this, Herod followed Jewish tradition that avoided images of animals and people, but here anything was possible, Porat said. It's truly a Roman capsule in Judea. The excavation and preservation of the latest parts of the palace began some 13 years ago with the discovery of Herod's grave. To Porat, the site illustrates Herod's mindset when all he's concerned with is how to preserve his memory to eternity. His name has been preserved here, he said. For the better or for the worse, the landscape here in this region south of Jerusalem has been changed. During his 36-year bloody reign as king of ancient Judea, King Herod the Great ordered the executions of 1 wife and 3 sons, and in a vain attempt to destroy the infant Jesus, directed the infamous Slaughter of the Innocents. Also known as the Massacre of the Innocents, Herod had ordered the execution of all male children 2 years old and under in the vicinity of Bethlehem. Although he was a ruthless leader who represented Rome in Judea, he was also a visionary and responsible for many of Israel's most architecturally advanced structures which have survived. He was responsible for, among other projects, the Second Temple in Jerusalem, the Palace Fortress on Mount Masada, and the impressive Port of Caesarea. And finally, Pastor Jamie was searching his cupboard for a new collar before church one Sunday morning. In the back of the cupboard, he found a small box containing 3 eggs and £100 in coins. He called his wife upstairs to ask her about the box and its contents. Embarrassed, she admitted having hidden the box for the entire time of their marriage. Disappointed and hurt, Pastor Jamie asked her why. His wife replied that she hadn't wanted to hurt his feelings. He asked how the box could have hurt his feelings. She replied that every time during their marriage that he delivered a poor sermon, she placed an egg into the box. Pastor Jamie felt that 3 poor sermons in 30 years was certainly nothing to feel bad about, so he asked what the £100 was for. She replied, "Each time I got a dozen eggs, I sold them to the neighbour for a pound."
My name is Paul Hill. Thank you for listening to Lutheran Radio UK. Lutheran Radio News will be back next Friday. Until then, every blessing to you and goodbye for now.